Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Abe Hamilton. Hey, you can listen to us on, obviously, the radio, but you can listen to us on the internet at AFR.net, or you can watch and or listen to this show at our Facebook page. We're live video streaming there at Facebook Live, and you can we post Walker takes care of all the stories that we talk about. He posts them there, so you have easy access to the information we talk about. You don't have to go searching on the internet. So check that out. We were talking, and Steve Jordahl from American Family News and OneNewsNow.com. Steve, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tim.
Just before we get into Pearl Harbor, and you got some great stuff that people are going to hear about Pearl Harbor. We were talking just before the break that our if you didn't get a chance, folks, to hear Sandy Rios in the morning, go back and listen to that podcast, at least the interview she did. I guess it would have been about probably about 30 or 40 minutes into the show, her show this morning. For me, it would have been about 7:30, 7:40 Central Time. And she talked to a veteran naval officer. I don't know if he was an admiral.
He was an admiral. Forget his name.
But anyway, what he was sharing on there about the depletion of our military, the Navy, primarily the Navy and the Air Force he was talking about, was staggering. That's happened over the last 8 years or so. He was talking about President Obama's lack of priority for our military. And to say, I guess, how else would you phrase it, Ed?
No, that's exactly right. He was talking about the state of our Navy, which has its lowest ship total, he said, since World War One.
I was stunned by that.
I was thinking World War Two, but he said since World War One. He said when he was an admiral, he said we have, I think, 283 surface ships. They're not talking about submarines, but he said surface ships. He said in our entire fleet, he said that's what I was in charge of for just the Pacific when I was an admiral.
Wow.
So that's how much it has shrunk. And then he talked about the air wings.
What is that for those who don't know?
Well, air wings, we have bombers, we have fighters, we have support aircraft and a wing. Now, Steve, you were in the Air Force, weren't you?
No, I lived in Colorado Springs near the Air Force Academy. There's a difference.
He also stayed at a Holiday Inn Express.
I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
His name is Admiral James Ace Lyons Jr.
Okay, I was going to defer to an Air Force guy, but an air wing would be
much to my chagrin,
a group of aircraft that perform certain missions that we ask them to. We have 12 wings when he said we need 18, so we are only at 2/3. And I've heard and read stories about the fact that we can't even in terms of that number of aircraft, we can't even put them in the air at the same time, because we have to cannibalize parts from one aircraft to put it in another one if something's not working. And so we are in very, very tough shape. And
you combine that with the demoralization of the military over the last 8 years, with President Obama promoting open homosexuality.
Hostility towards chaplains.
Wanting women to be in combat. Hostility towards chaplains, Christian chaplains. I know we've read about all these veteran military officers who've retired because they don't want to see what's happened to their military that they grew up with. Most of you military folks are patriotic. That's traditional. Patriotic, many of them from conservative homes. They want to serve our country.
And right.
So President Obama has... and I guess to a certain extent you could hold Congress responsible too, for not uh, for diminishing the numbers. I guess some would argue, well, you don't need that much as you used to need the numbers. But yeah, that's fine to say until you get into a war, mm-hmm. you know, and then you say, well, why send in so and so, and they go, well, President Obama cut that out. You know, you know, we don't have that many anymore, sir. You mean we can't fight over here and over? No, we can't.
Well, anyway. Traditionally, the U.S. military wanted to be able to fight, have enough, you know, in terms of Navy, Air Force, Army, Marines, and other support, wanted to be able to fight two conventional wars at the same time. And we can no longer do that.
So all that, we can revisit this later. Maybe get this gentleman, this admiral, on our program here. Get his number from Sandy and get him on our program so he can tell our listeners what he told Sandy's listeners this morning. But all that to say this, that President Trump has said we need to rebuild our military, and I think he's right. But that doesn't happen overnight. You don't build a ship,
right?
You know, overnight.
You don't go down to Walmart and pick them up,
right? You don't build. You don't get. Also, I've heard about us being short of pilots, fighter pilots, than the numbers that we used to have. So, I mean,
right.
A lot of things have to change, and it's going to take some time to do that. It's not going to be done overnight. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Now, Steve,
yes, sir.
Tell us about Pearl Harbor and so forth.
Interesting what you were talking about. I gave, in preparation for today, a story that we're going to hear in a second. I called David Barton, a resident historian, well, not a resident, but a well-respected historian, and he said the main lesson that we learned from Pearl Harbor was that we needed to be ready to fight a war on two fronts, and we've forgotten that since. But today is the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. I'm a history buff, and so I put a piece together that you will hear throughout the day on the radio station at the top of the hour. Also, just if you're thinking about this, at the top of onenewsnow.com, our news site, you can find this story and the poll question: have you visited the USS Arizona Memorial? But can I play you the piece I put together?
Please do.
It was a seminal moment for America, cast in our minds in black and white hues with grainy audio that every student of history can quote by heart.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
If Pearl Harbor was the first great sneak attack on the United States, 9/11 was the second. Historian David Barton says the two enemies are eerily similar.
Japan was the ISIS of that day. Back in the day, the Japanese had beheading competitions. Who could behead 100 prisoners the fastest? And they were people who loved suicide attacks. There were more than 3,500 suicide attacks carried out against America by Japan.
But he says if the enemy has stayed the same, America has changed. And according to Barton, not altogether for the better.
If you will see the State of the Union address that was given by President Roosevelt just a matter of weeks after Pearl Harbor, he talked about how we know that
the plan by which the Holy Bible and the Cross of Mercy would be displaced by Mein Kampf and the swastika and the naked sword. They know that victory for us means victory for religion, and they could not tolerate that. The world is too small to provide adequate living room for both Hitler and God.
We would never inject a spiritual tone into a conflict today. We are so far from having a clarity of evil and right and wrong, and those are words we just don't use today.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
All right, great report there, Steve. I mentioned that famous radio speech from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, our president then, to the American people. That may have been the most listened to speech in all of radio.
It could have been.
I don't think TV was around then.
No,
TV, it was not.
TV was on the brink. I guess it came along in the next 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, in the 50s, I think.
Many people listening to us who are.
That was actually the speech he was giving to Congress.
There were two speeches. The one at the beginning was the declaration of war that he gave on December 8th.
Okay.
And the next, the piece that ended was his State of the Union address. I believe it was January 8th or 9th.
So I had no idea. 42. He brought out that contrast. The religion, the religion contrast.
Yeah, I didn't know this. Is what strikes me about this whole thing. We are a very different country. When we went to war, we hear about the ration cards that Americans carried. Their sons and daughters were drafted and sent to war, so they had a personal stake in the war. You know, the war bond effort, it was a national effort. I'm so very proud of our men and women in uniform. They are of all volunteer force. But what that does, and I'm not saying we should change it, this is another debate, but what that does is it kind of isolates America from the conflicts. We send our boys, men and women now, over there to fight our battles. We don't have as near as much of a stake in the outcome of that battle. And we're not ready as a nation, we are nowhere near ready to fight the battle that is before us right now.
If I can add, Franklin Delano Roosevelt said things much more specific than what you heard right there about the spiritual dynamic of the war. For instance, he said on September 1, 1941, Labor Day, after we'd, let's see, that's before?
That would be before Pearl Harbor.
But anyway, he's talking about you know, the world at conflict, and he goes, he says this, quote, preservation of these rights, let me start here. This great war effort must be carried through. It shall not be imperiled by the handful of noisy traitors, betrayers of America, betrayers of Christianity itself, end quote. Then he said on November 1st, 1940, did FDR, again, remember, you're talking about the rise of Hitler's Nazi Germany. And he says, those forces hate democracy and Christianity as two phases of the same civilization. They oppose democracy because it is Christian. They oppose Christianity because it preaches democracy, end of quote. That's Franklin Delano Roosevelt. One more. He said in September 1, 1941, preservation of these rights is vitally important now, not only to us who enjoy them, but to the whole future of Christian civilization, end of quote. That's back when, and Harry Truman
had this. That was a Democratic president.
Up to FD, JFK would have had the same kind of worldview.
Let me, if I could, before I leave you guys, I'd like to leave you on a bit of a brighter note.
Where are you going, Steve?
Oh, I can stick. I can stick around, but I know that one of my favorite
people.
Favorite people's coming up here in a second. But did you know that veterans of Pearl Harbor can still be buried and laid to rest in Pearl Harbor at the side of their ship? If you were a veteran at Pearl Harbor that day, you can have your remains placed near the, in fact, several members have had their remains placed under the gun turret.
Really?
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. I didn't know that at all.
And then the final, this is an interesting thing that came to my mind. A crew member, a baby girl's remains lie entombed within the USS Utah.
Well, I didn't know that either.
A sailor had the remains of his little girl who was born at birth. Her name was Nancy Lynn Wagner.
She died at birth?
She died at birth, okay. And her ashes were there. He was going to scatter them at sea, and the USS Utah was sunk. They had a memorial for her in 2004. Her twin sister, Mary Krieg, visited the memorial on the 60th anniversary in 2001, I should say. And they had a memorial for that little baby girl that was lost in the Utah.
Hey, wow, Steve.
That's some great stuff, Steve.
Where can people hear your report that you were using the quotes?
The report will be is on our news. It's probably played because I don't play my own stuff when I anchor, and I'll be anchoring this afternoon. But on all our stations at the top of the hour, they can read the written report at onenewsnow.com.
Okay. Thank you, Steve Jordahl.
Great stuff, Steve.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed and Abe. And joining us now is our good friend, Dr. Alex McFarland, who's in – are you in North Carolina today, Alex?
No, I'm actually in South Carolina today, but headed to do Exploring the Word. So I'm headed to a studio outside of Charlotte.
Undisclosed location?
an undisclosed location. But, hey, let me tell you something. I had an incredible experience this past summer. Angie and I were at Shadow Mountain Church with David Jeremiah, and he had two of the oldest surviving veterans of Pearl Harbor, Joe Chavez, who's 104, and then another gentleman, Alex, whose last name I can't pronounce. He's a 95 or 100, but the two oldest surviving veterans of Pearl Harbor, both of whom are devout Christians, and I met them both and got a photograph with them. And I'll tell you guys, it really is moving when you think about how the country pulled together. And there were some courageous, godly, patriotic Americans that stared down Hitler and Hirohito and preserved democracy for us, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, you know, it was a remarkable time in our country's history. And I guess a lot of people today, I don't know, looking back, maybe we have some historical perspective that, but I mean, at the time, the world was ending.
Right.
Potentially our country was going to go, go away. Maybe, I don't know how you, that what that would have looked like exactly, but I'm talking about here is Japan attacking us in the Western, in the Pacific theater, as they call it, and then you have us being drawn into war in Europe because our greatest ally, Great Britain, was begging us, Churchill was, to come, the sleeping giant he called us, I think, come help them or else Europe would be lost to Nazi Germany for who knows how long. And that would have put us on an island, so to speak, in the world. We would have been. So it was a moment of crisis. I don't know that we've seen that with the exception of maybe the Civil War. I don't know that we've seen that, Abe, I can't think back in our country's history where things were at such a volatile state.
No, I think that was one of the critical mass moments for the world, really.
Yeah.
And you know, you had a lot of Christians, too, who Bible student-type Christians who studied their Bible, in other words, who were looking at Adolf Hitler as being a type or perhaps even the Antichrist. I mean,
that's
you talk
right.
about somebody right. who's arising to power, great oratorical skills, you know, drawing people after him. And now
mesmerizing.
Mesmerizing. Yeah. He can't be stopped. You know, that's what it seemed like for a while. It does look like the end of the world, Alex.
Yeah. You know, there were people who thought that Adolf Hitler was the Antichrist. Definitely hated
right.
the Jewish people, persecuted the Jews. C.S. Lewis's brother Warren was a prisoner of war, and Warren Lewis wrote to his brother and said, there's a demonic kind of aura, and you listen, and Warren said, I have to fight to make sure that I don't succumb to the lies and believe, but there is this compelling force about him. And I do think World War II represented probably an unseen battle that we can only imagine. But praise God, you know, Tom Brokaw was right. He called it, you know, the greatest generation that fought. And remember, Hirohito said, I had intended to immobilize the Pacific Fleet, but I awakened a sleeping giant and filled him with a terrible resolve. You remember that quote?
Right.
And
that was the premiere of
Japan.
Of Japan, the premier, I don't know if that's the right title, the emperor, I should say, of Japan. Well, maybe he was the one that used it, but I think Churchill did use that expression too, referring to America as the sleeping giant.
Yeah.
And anyway,
and
go ahead.
What I say to young people and Christians of all ages, now it's our turn to defend faith and freedom, and we need to pray. I think it's a very honorable thing to serve in the armed forces, to be a law enforcement officer. You know, some of us are serving God in a pulpit, but I think it's every bit as noble and holy to serve God as a peace officer, as a defender of freedom. And Reagan was right. You know, freedom is only one generation away from extinction at any given time. And we need to thank God for our blessings and to continue to be vigilant in maintaining them.
Amen. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Abe And Ed, hey, I want to ask you real quickly, we haven't talked much about the election with you, Alex. Why do you think, what's the number one, give us the top two reasons you think so many Christians voted for Donald Trump in this last presidential election, as if there's one every other week, presidential election. Why do you think that was?
There are a lot of reasons, but I think one is the issue of life. And
life? You're kind of muffled. Excuse me if you're interrupting you here. I don't know why, but so I just want to make sure you're understood correctly. You said the number one is, if I had to ask you for the top two reasons, you would put the pro-life cause number one or number two?
The pro-life cause, and then Hillary's comment about the deplorable.
Okay.
I mean, that was a defining moment when I think millions of Americans suddenly realized that the left, and Hillary Clinton in particular, look at the faith and values, hardworking Americans with utter contempt. So, you know, there was the passing of Scalia that definitely made the Supreme Court kind of a jump ball. And then it was just such a clear moment when Hillary said, look, all these, you know, flag-waving Americans that support Trump, they are deplorable. I think a lot of people said, okay, it's time to, we've got to take a deep breath and go out there and do the mature thing, and we've got to go vote.
Why do you think Hillary Clinton, did she not have more discipline than to refer to Donald Trump's supporters as a basket of deplorables? I mean, that's not a very good job of how to win friends and influence people, or how to woo people to your side when you're needing these swing states to break for you, and then you inject that kind of vitriol into the body politic, as they say. Why do you think she wasn't smart enough to avoid that kind of mistake?
Well, I think she spoke with candor because that's how she truly feels about Americans and America. I mean, you know, and I pray for Hillary, but one of her college friends, this is 20 years ago during the Clinton era, but said that she was never without a well-worn copy of the writings of Karl Marx. I mean, I think that she was really expressing how she feels about this country and the people that love it.
Wow. Well, I guess she's got a lot of time to think about it now.
yeah, really.
Walk the dog and whatever else she's going to be doing.
Grandchild?
Huh?
She's got a grandchild?
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, that's very interesting. So the top two reasons, according to Dr. Alex McFarland, so many Christians voted for Donald Trump was the pro-life cause, which, to Donald Trump's credit, he was committed to openly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And number two, the reason is because they didn't want Hillary Clinton to be president because she had such contempt for Christians in America, and she was open about it. That's interesting. I had not heard the second part as being one of the top two reasons, but that makes sense to me, the basket of deplorables.
I read an article for Fox News at 3 a.m. on November 9th. The deplorables have spoken.
The deplorables have spoken. All right, Alex, thanks so much for your time. We look forward to hearing you this afternoon on Exploring the Word with Brother Bert.
God bless you all.
Thank you. Ed, thank you.
You're welcome.
Abe, thank you.
You're welcome.
Our thanks to Steve and to Fred and Walker. Walker Wildman helping us this morning. Check out our Facebook page for today's issues. And you have a wonderful day, folks. We'll see you back tomorrow.